you know, once it's gone through the kind of process of making sure that it's not a pile of shit, then there's no real set process for it. It's just whatever I think sounds best, or whether I can be bothered to go into the studio, because sometimes what I've done as a demo sounds good enough anyhow, you know, and I think, well, I'm not really going to get it any better than that, you know, except for maybe, you know, kind of technically it could be better with, you know, better production values and stuff in a studio, but sometimes, you know, it sounds fine as it is. And the early albums were all done like that, because, you know, once they were recorded at home on my little, you know, four track, I thought they sounded okay, so that was that, you know.
seems like one of your first real pop gems, which you've perfected over the year. One of the first real ones that, at least I'm aware of, is Lights Are Changing. Do you have anything to say about that?
Well, yeah, I do remember a bit about that one. I suppose that would be considered to be one of my two greatest hits. Although, of course, it was always hits by other people. But yeah, that was a song about getting older, basically, which is one of my recurring themes. And it was originally going to be called Green Lights Changing, because I was thinking about, you know, traffic lights, you know, the green lights, and they're changing to amber and red and all that stuff. So that was but then when I sang it, it sounded a bit clumsy and a bit, you know, like, oh, that doesn't sound. So it just became Lights Are Changing. You know, it's got some of my usual kind of obscure little references, like I'm thinking about Champion the Wonder Horse in it a bit. That's the equine star, is Champion the Wonder Horse, because the theme tune of that was a TV show in the 50s, and it was Frankie Lane, I think, sang it. I do take a lot of time and trouble with making the lyrics literate and interesting. I don't ever write about kind of, baby, I want to give you one, or I'm trucking down the Memphis highway and all that kind of shit. So I never do that. And I always sing in an English accent. It always has to be about England, because I'm English, and I can't stand English bands who pretend they're American. Equally, American bands who used to pretend they were English back in the, you know, like the kind of American Mersey Beach and things like that. What the f*** was that about? But, you know, the lyrics, I think it's important to me, at least, to kind of get something across that's going to kind of be, you know, as important as the music. You know, because a song, to my mind, is words and music. You know, if you've got a good tune and lyrics, it doesn't work. And if you've got great lyrics and a crap tune, it doesn't work. So it's important to have both. And I think too many people have throwaway lyrics, you know, that I really like my lyrics. Not my lyrics, I mean, I really like lyrics in a song. I think I'm impressed by things like Shipbuilding by Elvis Costello, which I kind of think, wow, f*** me, what a great bunch of lyrics. And Joni Mitchell and David Ackles and people who can really get across a kind of something quite deep and brutal, but make it sound really poetic and conversational at the same time. You know, I'm impressed by that, and I've always tried to kind of make my lyrics sound as conversational as possible. I don't want to invert sentences, so I will never do, you know, my love I would give so that it rhymes with live. You know, that's just, or if you have the word wife or life in a song, you always rhyme it with cuts like a knife. So forget that, you know, because nothing is going to cut like a knife in my lyrics, you know. It's got to be kind of slight, it's got to mean something, it's got to have a bit of a sense of humour and a bit of depth to it, and a bit of be literate, you know, and also slightly kind of conversational, so it sounds natural. And I take a lot of trouble over it. You know, I'll write a song in half an hour of words and music, and then spend a day changing three words.
Bevis Frond from the Triptych album. The track Old Man Blank. It's KFJC and the Bevis Frond special. We've moved on to the third album, although I suppose you could call it the fourth album, but third sort of official album if we discount the Bevis Through the Looking Glass, which we spoke about in the last break. Before Old Man Blank, we heard Nick Solomon, a.k.a. Mr. Bevis himself, talking about his writing style, how he comes up with lyrics and so on and so forth. We heard Lights Are Changing, also from the Triptych album, and started the set off with Into the Cryptic Mist. So three tracks from that third album as we work our way through this evening. I'm actually much more familiar with the live version of Lights Are Changing, which they played as part of the Live in Brixton set. KFJC went over to the UK in 1996, and we managed to get the Bevis Frond, which at that point in time was a three-piece band, and they came and played for us, and I remember that song very well. These earlier albums I'm not quite so familiar with, although Daryl Licht and Pete Dixon were both on the radio station back in those days and played them quite heavily on their shows. So that brings us up to date.
That's right.
Mr. Pete Dixon.
So we go on to music, and we're going to go on to yet another album. This is actually from the album called the Anti-Winnie Album, and it is, according to the liner notes, a second collection of unreleased material culled from the Ronzo archives. And the Anti-Winnie Album, we're going to play a song from that called City of the Sun, right here on KFJC, the Bevis Frond Special.
Thank you.
I always do the lyrics after the music. The music comes first. I never write lyrics before music.
Interesting.
Simply because if you're writing music, you can easily mess around with lyrics so that they scan properly. If you do the lyrics first, then it's much harder to write music to fit lyrics, I think. Because if you want it to sound... I mean, I always want the lyrics to sound like they make sense and also almost conversational, so that you could almost recite them without music. And if you want to have that kind of freedom of kind of words, then it's much easier to do it once you've got the music written, because you can, you know, you can take words out, stick in an extra two syllables here or switch it around, but it's much harder to do it the other way around, I think.
Plowing a Blazing Furrow, the Bevis Franz special on 89.7 FM KFJC. Derelict here with you among a cast of cohorts who you will hear from shortly. That was, I shouldn't even say that was. I personally just had my mind blown by the very appropriately titled Miskatonic Variations from the equally appropriately titled Acid Jam LP. Really, a very unique track among the tracks in the discography of the Bevis Frond, because it is certainly one of the heaviest and kind of most out recordings he ever did. And I find that also interesting because that was recorded in 1988. And 2 points I'd like to make about that. The first would be that generally, if there is any kind of overarching observation about the Bevis Frond, it's that it's kind of a retro psych band. And obviously, as you will hear in this special, it's a lot more than just that. Although, yeah, you bet your butt he kicks ass on the heavy psychedelic jams. But my other point is that it's kind of, you know, usually kind of positioned as being a retro kind of sound. And here in 1988, the track we just heard, Miskatonic Variations, that sounds, at least to my experienced ears, very much like the kind of music that was heard in the early 90s from Acid Mother's Temple, Tsurubami, all that kind of Japanese noise scene. Not literally, you know, every literal band, but in general, there was a lot of that type of thing coming out, and it was so fresh and new to us, and it was still very cool and very fresh and new. But here's a jam very similar from the Bevis Frond, 1988. Who was doing that kind of stuff then, really? So, just an interesting bit of observation.
It's true, definitely. This is Pete Dixon. Thank you, Derelict. We heard before that was the track City of the Sun, and that was from the Anti-Winnie album. The Anti-Winnie album was a Reckless release, and it was actually songs, unreleased material sent by Nick Solomon from the Waronzo archives, stuff that he hadn't released, and I'm not sure of the dates. I guess it's of the late 80s, and just stuff that a Reckless Records only release, not Waronzo at all. So a fine collection of tracks. And that song, City of the Sun, certainly a powerhouse there at that.
Thanks, Pete. Earl Grey here. And as we move on through the catalogue, and as I'm crouching down too low because the microphone's...
just being attacked by a microphone.
There we go. I can talk properly now.
KFJC.
Yeah, live radio at its best, folks. So we've worked our way through the first three formal releases, being Miasma and Inner Marshland and Triptych, with a couple of sort of odds and sods type albums in between, and the Acid Jam that Derelict's just been talking about. We now move on to the fourth release, which is Any Gas Faster. Now, this was an interesting release because everything up until this point, apart from occasional live tracks, had been recorded in Nick's home studio. He talks about that in one of the interview segments. But for this album, he decided to go into a proper recording studio, Goldust Studios in Bromley, which is in Kent, which, by an odd coincidence, is about a mile from where I used to work. And yet I never even knew there was a recording studio there, so I should look it up on the map sometime, because it's still there, because he still records there. Anyway, he's actually used Goldust Studios throughout when he's not recording at home. On this album also, he's joined by Martin Crowley on drums. Worked with him at some point in the past in a band called Room 13. So that was a slight change in direction as well, because also, apart from occasional guest appearances, I think Barry Watts appeared on one track on Inner Marshland, was it? I should check my facts before I go ahead with stuff like that. But anyway, mostly it was Nick playing everything, but on this album, he engaged the services of another drummer. He also talks about that in another interview segment. As I mentioned earlier, we had an excellent two interview sessions with Nick a few weeks ago, and lots of those still to come in the rest of tonight's special, and again next week from 7 to 11 p.m. for part two of the special. So let's get cracking with a track from the Any Gas Faster release. That was released in Waronzo in December 1989. And the track we're going to hear is These Dark Days. It's 89.7 KFJC, Plowing a Blazing Furrow, the Bevis Rond special.
sort of person to be aware of my limitations, and you know, I think I'm a pretty decent guitarist and a pretty good bass player, but then, you know, as a drummer, I'm very limited. So if you've got something that actually needs kind of good drumming rather than adequate drumming, I'll probably do it in a proper studio with a proper drummer. There might be, you know, a guitar solo that I think, well, I can play a guitar break, but Barry could do it better, or Paul could do it better. And sometimes, you know, you listen to the bass and you think, well, no, I think Aid could, being a great bass player, he could probably do a bit, you know, because I always think of myself as a guitarist playing bass, but Aid's the bassist, and sometimes it just needs a bit more solidity or whatever. So yeah, I'm really just kind of looking at how it sounds to me and thinking, well, it could sound better if I used a person who could do it better.
Continue going.